Good evening and welcome back to another week of the Alaska Identity Project. My name is Adrienne Lopez and we're broadcasting here on KTOO News Juneau 104.3 in Alaska's capital city. Thanks for tuning in tonight. We've got a great show, two very exciting guests. In the first part of the show tonight, I'll be interviewing Alaska Native storyteller Ishmael Hope. Then in the second part of the show, stay tuned, I'll be airing a pre-recorded interview with Senator Mark Begich, who will be coming into Juneau this weekend for a few days. Reminders to listeners that you can find the Alaska Identity Project on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at Alaska ID Project, and go to my blog, adriennechile.blogspot.com, and find recordings of our past shows here on the Alaska Identity Project. Before we get started with Ishmael Hope here, I'd like to plug a couple of upcoming events. Both by the World Affairs Council, the Juneau World Affairs Council. One is on Sunday, Mark Begich, Senator Mark Begich, will be speaking about his recent trip to Afghanistan here on the KTO studios on Sunday at 2 o'clock. So that's sponsored by the World Affairs Council. It's open to the public, free of charge. And if you happen to see Senator Begich walking around in Juneau this week or whenever he's in town, remember to say happy birthday. He'll be turning 50 at the end of this month on March 31st. Also, the World Affairs Council will be putting on a monthly travelogue event about Vietnam with Elfrida Nord. She'll be sharing photos and stories of her recent trip to Vietnam and the Southeast in and the changes in the Southeast Asian country. That's on Tuesday, March 6th from 5:30 to 6:30 at the Gold Town Nickelodeon here in Juneau. Ishmael Hope is a storyteller from Juneau, Alaska, who shares stories from his Inupiaq and Tlingit heritages.
That's good. Yeah, you got it.
I'm trying. He performs across Alaska and the United States for all ages and varieties of audiences. He also is a writer, actor, and an enthusiastic learner and educator of Alaska Native art and culture. Ishmael is deeply involved in the cultural events of his people and frequently shares his art and the culture, art and culture in workshops, classrooms, and conferences. Welcome, Ishmael. Thanks for coming onto the show. Yeah, your bio. I actually could have taken up the entire show reading your bio.
I was reading it.
And I'm like, where do I even start? So if you're out there and you want to read more about him, you can go to AlaskaNativeStoryteller.com. And that is your great little blog website. And actually, your blog is part of the website. And it's got a lot of your recent speeches at events around Alaska, which is very cool. So, but what's not really highlighted there is, which we'll start off our interview tonight, is talking about your role with this movie that was recently launched, The Big Miracle, filmed up in Barrow, I believe, parts of it at least. Can you give us a little bit about background of how you got involved in this and the different roles you played in The Big Miracle?
Well, it was actually mostly filmed in Anchorage last year.
Okay.
Pretty much the last fall to the early winter time. And they just sort of had some, background outdoor shots that they got for Barrow. None of the actors actually went up there.
Yeah.
It was just it would have been great. It's a beautiful, beautiful town, but just the logistics of having a really large crew go into a small town. A lot of them not used to the weather.
That's true.
They just decided that Anchorage would be the best spot, but really, I played a character. Though you wouldn't necessarily know. No one ever said my name in the movie, but
it's in the credits.
It was called Bud was my name originally. It was Inupiaq Bud.
Bud.
Inupiaq Bud would have been a kind of a more fun name, I thought. Like Burner's Bay Jim or, Cache Creek Charlie or, some of those other sort of old time, kind of
Alaskan names.
Yeah, Alaskan names.
But they didn't listen to you, did they?
I lucked out, the thing about acting, this applies to theater, but it really applies, to film, I think. Is that so much of it is dependent on your look, the specific type of look that, that they're looking for. And, like this recent movie that I heard a rumor that with this recent movie, sorry to spread rumors, but I don't think it's necessarily a bad one. It's this John Cusack and Nicolas Cage movie and,
the one about the violent guy in Anchorage.
And it turns out that they're both, pretty short. So they're kind of looking for a short kind of guys to not sort of upstage, you know, their leads. And so, you know, I'd be very surprised if I got into anything else. It just happened to be they were looking. They had this particular movie that in a lot of ways highlights Native people, Inupiaq people, Eskimo people. And I happened to get a role and I flew up to Anchorage and spent a few weeks there. And really, you know, I just happened to be a guy whose, you know, face comes across the screen a few times and responds and sort of grimaces at the Drew Barrymore character, or, you know, or the John Krasinski character, or the Ted Danson character. Oh. But it was incredible fun, and all of the actors that were involved were wonderful, and there's some amazing Native people who really, really represented the Native community of Alaska so well. Just mm-hmm. I was just so proud of them. John Pingayak is this one cultural leader. Okay. He's a Chupik cultural leader that played the lead, Malik. And I just was able to spend time just sitting and talking with him during the long times. You just sort of sit around, yeah.
And you know, eating, like, and drinking coffee.
Oh, 6 a.m. call, everybody, you know, and then so we'd all get up, and basically it's, you know, you hurry up and you wait. you can get in our makeup and all that stuff. And I thought it was kind of fun, though, with the makeup and hair, because you get to
pampered a little.
Yeah, and then you get to sort of chit-chat with the other actors and, you know. It was just an adventure. In a lot of ways, it feels like it was kind of a dream, and then to go back to my real life.
Yeah,
you know. But I just felt very lucky to be able to spend some time doing this fun project, knowing that most of it was just good fortune and luck, but really trying to make the best of it. And working hard and really connecting with the people that were there.
Yeah, yeah. No, The Big Miracle, you also played a role in helping to cast, right? How did that come about? You helped with the Alaskan casting part of it?
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the thing. I you know, these things, getting cast in a thing is just really being persistent, being not too pushy, you know, being humble and just being genuine. I think, like with anything, when you're looking for opportunities, when you're looking for a job, the people are really looking, I think, for good people, for people that they could really work with. You're throwing a whole bunch of people together that don't know each other. Mm-hmm. And so I think that really, that kind of thing really matters, even if so much of it is just about a look. I think people will remember good people. Mm-hmm. They really will. Especially kind of with the people that brought the Alaskan cast together, Deborah Schilt and Alaska Film Services. She and the interns and the staff that she has, just really incredible, wonderful people. And so Deborah called Perseverance Theater, Shona Strausser, you know, just really a good friend of mine and a wonderful actor and director, educator. So they talked and Shona recommended me. And so Deborah calls me and so we talk and I, you know, of course, just being a community guy, I think there's so much talent here in Juneau. Mm-hmm. And so I really talked it up with Deborah. And so then she had to go back, of course, to the studios and, you know, they weren't planning on dropping in to Sitka, to Juneau, and then Sitka would have been, since they're close by, she would have dropped by both places. They weren't planning on doing that, but I was, you know, again, lucky to persuade her to come down. And so I helped to set up the auditions here in Juneau. You know, just a small thing, but I feel very proud of them seeing Juneau actors. I mean, granted, they don't want to fly everybody up to Anchorage. Really, people in Anchorage have a really good opportunity to get into the movies because they cast 40-some parts and a whole bunch of extras.
Wow.
Whole bunch of extras, 40-some speaking parts.
That's a lot, yeah.
But as it turned out, they got Ivan Bailey here and Brady Ingledew, in addition to myself. So we had three Juno representatives who were able to fly up to Anchorage and, you know, and be part of the movie. Just very special, special thing. And I hope for their next shows they come back again, because I really do think we have a lot of talent.
Yeah, well, you started here, and maybe now that for the future they'll have that as a place to go.
Yeah, I mean, Perseverance Theater, Theater in the Rough, and just generally the arts community. They're very, very supportive. Now, granted, we have to challenge each other. We have to really work with each other. We can't get sort of isolated and just do things like just trying to, you know, cast our friend or our husband or that, thing.
Yeah.
We got to really push each other and train amongst ourselves and bring some people in to get that training. So we can't, in a lot of ways, rest in our laurels as a sort of a local community that just sort of feeds on each other. I think the art community suffers in that way. Mm. With that said, as long as we're working against that inertia and we're challenging ourselves, we're a wonderful artistic community.
Yeah.
Just as a whole, there's so many artists and actors and directors that, you know, I really admire and appreciate. You know, that's helped me a great deal, you know. I just got started as a 19-year-old boy with Moby Dick, and I embarrassed myself a lot of times. I didn't know what I was doing a lot of times. Out of fear, I probably got a little full of myself a lot of times. Mm. But I think with that balance of supportiveness and enough tough love for you to have, I think, eventually develop some self-awareness, then I think there's all the right sort of ingredients for making a really amazing artistic community. Mm-hmm. And so it comes out in not only our talent, our natural talent, but I think people have developed and have gotten better and grown as artists.
Because of the high quality of the arts here, yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That's a good reflection on that. But before we move off of Big Miracle, seeing what came out, the final production, do you think it's an accurate representation of the Native culture in Alaska? Did they try to follow it as much as possible? It is based on a true story, right?
Well, yeah, it's based on a true story. It's probably a slightly complex, I think, answer would be needed for that, because I think the Native people, all the Alaskan community that came on there, they really represented Alaska, and a lot of that's a credit to Deborah Schilt in really trying to cast well. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, these just you feel like it's got some sense of genuine Alaska and the Alaska Native community. And John Pingayek, he's just so genuine. Watching him on the screen is just very special.
Mm-hmm.
And he sang his ancestral song in the most pivotal part of the movie. And, you know, I was very, very moved by that. So I think there's a lot of a genuine quality. On the other hand, I think I'm very, very proud of seeing that there's a more movement towards Indigenous filmmaking so that we can truly represent ourselves in the way that we want to be represented, in the way that really tells our story and then helps people see that actually these are valuable stories, you know. We're still in that conversation of really trying to get out Indigenous worldview, Indigenous culture, trying to share that and share that it's got meaning, it's got value, it's got importance. It feels funny even to have to say that.
Well,
but
it's important to remind people.
But we need to remind people and show people just particularly why it's important. Just show the very particular, genuine, in our own voices. And so in that sense, yes, it's great that we had this big Hollywood movie, you know,
yeah.
and that we kept our integrity and we shared ourselves. But I also think, you know, we need people like Andrew Okpeaha McLean, who just came out with On the Ice, which I just saw, and it's amazing.
Oh, it's at Nickelodeon, right?
Yeah, it's just showing. It's showing right now, and
this weekend again.
And you know, he's a great friend. Him and Kara Marcoux, who produced it, his wife, you know, did an outstanding job. And that kind of thing, you know. So in that way, I feel like we could sort of do Hollywood, you know, as long as it's not Hollywood at its worst, it's Hollywood at its best. But I think there's also a whole nother paradigm. That needs to be supported and needs to grow. And that's things like Andrew McLean's movie. There's Smoke and Fish, this documentary that just came out, directed and produced by Luke Griswold Turgis and Corey Mann, who also is the subject of the film, Clinkett. And, you know, I was also fortunate enough to help out a little bit with that movie. And then there's the For the Rights of All, which is a documentary about Elizabeth Pradovich.
Oh, yeah.
That just came out, I think, 2 years ago. And then there's just this growth in just general Alaskan filmmaking that, you know, I think we got to believe. We have a good story to tell, you know, and people want to hear it. And they want to hear it just as it is, just as it is. Doesn't need to be changed, romanticized, you know, turned into something else, turned into a fairy tale, turned into any kind of stereotypes that you find in pop culture, turned into savagery. We can tell our own stories.
Yeah. And you're a storyteller, Ishmael. Ishmael Hope, if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Ishmael Hope. He's very eloquent and articulate. And let's move on to that, because you define yourself as an Alaska Native storyteller. So do you think your role as a storyteller is maybe inspired or is bringing your generation into this filmmaking and talking about your culture?
I wouldn't say I'm the authority. Gosh, there's this... Cyril George, he's this 89-year-old elder. He lives just across the channel in Douglas. And I've been fortunate enough to spend some time with him. Just I wish I could spend more time with him. But just in that little bit of time, I get to sit down and hear his stories. And then one time he said, "I'm not an authority, but I like to tell stories." And since he's he can't really hear, so I typed to him on my laptop, to communicate with him. And so I typed down, you know, "If you're not an authority, who is?" So really what I see myself, the reason why I like to also call myself a learner, enthusiastic learner, as well as educator, is, you know, I do recognize I got a long ways to go when, you know, once you get a sense of really what the an indigenous worldview and how it gets represented by tradition bearers, once you really, really sort of see that and recognize its distinctness and also its utter beauty and its truth, you know, then you go, whoa, you know, I got a long ways to go. And one of the most important keys into that is learning the language. And so I'm just beginning to learn. But I'm trying to spend as much time with particularly Thlingit, since that's where I was raised. Tlingit tradition bearers, and soak in as much as I can. I'm also spending a lot of time at Sea Alaska Heritage at the archives over there, working with the historian and archivist Zachary Jones, and there's just amazing stuff there. So I think the really to go into that worldview, to use all this documentation, to learn the language on your own, as well as working with language speakers, and then spending time in, there's nothing in the world that could replace that physical connection of just being in the same space as a tradition bearer, and soaking that in as much as possible. So that's where I get so much of my strength from, and it also gives me a lot of I feel very humbled by that, knowing that there's just a lot to just have a far way to go
to learn from. Well, speaking of elders and learning from people who have experience, in your website you talk about a lady named Nora Dauenhauer, and she gave you advice, and that she said to listen to the old people, because they've been through it, all of it.
Yeah.
And so it sounds like you've tried to find or identify these people that can teach you through their experiences, right?
And I mean, Nora, gosh, she's her and her husband Richard have just done, created access to world class indigenous knowledge, and therefore something that reaches as high a peak of human expression as you'll find anywhere in the world. Whether you call that literature, whether you call that poetry, whether you call that art, it's just deep and rich and beautiful human expression. And they've led me to that, as well as countless others. And so I've just been lucky to spend time at their house, across the bridge, and take their classes and just try to soak in as much as possible from them. Just recently, it's like Keokne Heide Shutuatan. Nora, she opened the box of knowledge for me. She literally had this box.
She had a box, a real one.
that had the carvings of her family. Just so much of her family, and beadwork. So much of her family are just very, very important artists in the Tlingit tradition. And so she was just bringing it out and showing it with me and sharing with me and, talking to me about the traditions, talking about the artistic, the visual arts, the oratory, and just how, to me, it's just how we were human with each other. And in the particular Tlingit slant, how we connect with each other. And she knows that, she knows how to do that. And so, I'm just trying to take every opportunity I can to spend time with them. Because I've seen it, being a young guy, when I was just playing around, outside, my dad would always, my dad, Andrew Hope III, would always keep me and my brother sort of around the native community. And so we'd just be, playing and blah, blah, but every now and then, boom, it's like an elder gives a speech that is, it just cuts through everything. Almost feels like it's outside time. And that's how I'd say. And I just,
stops,
so momentarily, it's just like, what was that? And then just continue playing and not necessarily let it all soak in, but having been affected in some way by that. And so I've had, many types of experiences like that growing up. And eventually there were enough of those experiences for me to go, hey, wait a second, maybe I should, actually spend time with this and really see what it is. And so it's been, it's been quite a journey, you know, last especially, I think, dozen years. You know, my dad said, boy, you took it for granted. You took it for granted.
What?
You know, he told me that. Because I'd be saying ridiculous things like taking credit for my own ideas,
well,
you know, but then he
humble.
Would go, you know, your mom gave it to you since you were born, you know,
it's not your own.
So it's not your own. Yeah. I mean, that's part of the Native tradition too. Mm-hmm. You try to, deflect and go outward and keep pushing for raising other people up and for, connecting and loving your community.
Yeah.
You know.
I wish we had more time, Ishmael.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I had a lot more questions, but we actually are going to wrap up. But real quickly, what's next for you? Is there one project that's on the horizon in 2012?
Well, the biggest thing is I got to keep loving my lovely little family, my wife, Lily, our daughter, Betty, and our son, Louis, who is just 2.5 months old. And then from there, I'm working on studying a lot, as I've talked about, and there's a play that I'm writing, The Defenders of Alaska Native Country, which is about the land claims movement.
Okay.
It's more exciting than it sounds, because there's all these great, fun, passionate people that were involved, like William Paul, who were profound leaders that not many of us know and recognize today.
Yeah. So look for that on the horizon. I encourage everyone to go to your website, AlaskaNativeStoryteller.com. They could also probably friend you on Facebook.
Yeah.
I know we're friends there now. That's a great place to get information. So thanks for coming on tonight, Ishmael.
Thank you
Ishmael
so much.
Hope, yes. Alaska Native Storyteller. For those of you out there in Juneau, Meg Mackey, I'm going to leave you tonight in the break. Before we go to break here, Meg Mackey is a local talent. She's going statewide with her new album, Eat Your Heart Out. The song is Ray of Sunshine. And next up on the show will be an interview I pre-recorded with Senator Mark Begich. So stay tuned on the Alaska Identity Project.
There's nothing you can do about the way that you are. I'll leave in the park. 'Cause I've got a rain of sunshine. Raise your glass up. It's time for kicking ass. Forget the past, yeah. 'Cause I've got a ray of sunshine. Lift yourself up. You know that this won't last. For what it's worth, yeah. The outcome is worth the hurt. Now looking back, that you say I'm playing the game. 'Cause I've got this chip on my back. Raise your glass up. It's time for kicking it. Forget the past, yeah. 'Cause I've got a shine. Lift yourself up. You know that this won't last. For what it's worth, yeah. The outcome is worth the hurt. No looking back.
Welcome back to the Alaska Identity Project. This is Adrian Lopez on KTOO News Juneau 104.3 in Alaska's capital city. Thanks for staying tuned in this second part of the show tonight. Up next, I'll be interviewing Senator Mark Begich. But first, I want to remind listeners out there that you can find the Alaska Identity Project on Facebook. You can like the show there and stay up to date on my weekly interviews with Alaskans making an impact in our state. You can also go to Twitter and follow the project at Alaska ID Project, or go to my blog at adrianchile.blogspot.com and find the recordings from past interviews. Senator Mark Begich is in his third year representing Alaska in the U.S. Senate, where his primary focus is building a strong Alaska economy. Already in his short time in the Senate, Senator Begich has risen to key positions for Alaska. He was recently named chairman of the Commerce Committee's Subcommittee on Oceans, Atmosphere, Fisheries, and Coast Guard, which is broad jurisdiction over important issues in Alaska. He works on behalf of Alaska's servicemen and women on the Armed Services Committee and is also a member of the Veterans Homeland Security Budget and Budget Committees. As chairman of the Senate Democratic Steering and Outreach Committee, Senator Begich holds the number 5 position in the leadership for the Senate majority, which he uses to advocate on Alaska issues. Senator Begich was elected to the Senate in 2008 after serving as mayor of Anchorage for nearly 6 years. Born and raised in Anchorage, Senator Begich's other priorities include reducing the national deficit, tax reform, and building a national energy policy that emphasizes Alaska's oil and gas resources, an Alaska natural gas pipeline, and the state's many renewable resources. Quite a bio. I didn't read it all, Senator Begich, but thanks for taking the time to come on the show today, tonight.
Thank you very much.
And let's just first start off by talking about your upcoming trip to Juneau and what is going to be on the agenda for your time here in Alaska's capital city.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. I'll have 2 full days in Juneau, a fully packed schedule from meetings with individuals, groups, public forums. We'll have an event on Sunday with the World Affairs Council and a number of other visits to local businesses. I'll meet with the Chamber Board and just a slew of meetings within the Juneau area. Along with that, as you know, I'll be speaking to the legislature. This is my address that I give annually, kind of on what we've been working on, what we should be working on, and then I take questions from the legislature, which are always interesting to see because there's such a wide range of issues they bring up. But that's going to be the schedule, and more than likely we'll even have more as we get closer to the date as my staff continues to fill the schedule up. They don't think I should sleep, so they're just going to fill it up, and I'll be down for 2 days of marathon.
Oh, man. Well, on the point of the legislative address, is there anything specific that this year you'll be talking about over past years, or is it kind of always the same?
Well, we're going to emphasize some pieces and then some new stuff. I mean, for example, I think it's very important, as you mentioned, my new role as the chair of the Oceans Committee that manages fisheries and NOAA and the Coast Guard as well as the Arctic issues. The Arctic, which is continuing to be a ever-growing opportunity for Alaska, I believe, and I'll talk a lot about some ideas from everything from how we need to develop a long-term deep-water port in the Arctic in the federal waters and ensuring that we have capacity to respond to our oil and gas industry, potential fishing industry up there, the cruise ship industry that's already moving through, the ships that are moving through mm-hmm. that area, all the other issues of the Arctic that are pretty exciting in a lot of ways. We don't know enough about the Arctic in the sense of what its potential is for Alaska. So I'll expand on some ideas on what we need to do to move forward. We'll talk about the progress we've made in the last 3 years on oil and gas. I mean, I look back to where we were the last 30 years in oil and gas development in the federal waters and the federal lands is pretty limited, to say the least. In the last 3 years, we've seen some incredible progress. This year, as I said, I actually said it last year in the kind of with the reporters after the session of what I thought would happen, and I believed back then, and now it's about to happen, that we're going to see oil and gas development as well as exploration in several of the federal areas. For example, the National Petroleum Reserve will have a development occurring. Chukchi will have its first exploratory well in many, many years, and then it looks like we're on schedule for 2014 for the Beaufort Sea with regards to Statoil. So we see some huge opportunities in that reservoir. Just Chukchi and Beaufort is 25, 26 billion barrels of oil. So huge updates I'll give about that. And I'll talk about some general issues, obviously, the military, Eielson, what's going on in Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. Talk about education legislation we're working on. So several issues, but really talking about the future of Alaska and where we need to go and where the state needs to play a more significant role.
Yeah. Now, do you appeal in this address, for people out there who might not know what you're supposed to do in this address, do you ask them to collaborate with you on these projects, our senators and legislators?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, that every year I've gone, I've mentioned some project or some effort that we're working on together, and the legislature has been always stepping to the plate. I will tell you a couple examples. Last year, or year before last, they talked about the Tanana Bridge up in Fairbanks and what the federal government, we were able to put about $100 million into it. Someone asked me, one of the legislators asked me, what more can they do? And I said, put some more money to it. They did. The project now is happening, employing Alaskans. We talked about the year before that, the Alaska Territorial Guard that lost its pension, and I needed help from the legislature to help fund that while we got their permanent pensions in place. These are incredible Alaska Natives who served our military, served our country, and because of a quirk in the law, they were exempted from receiving a pension. We fixed that, but the legislature stepped to the plate. Or down in Southeast, where we're talking about port redevelopments and how the state has stepped to the plate. Most recently, from our end, we were able to do a piece of legislation, have a carve-out of $30 million nationwide for rural ports. It was Alaska that got a third of that money, and it was because most of those ports had state-matching money that the legislature put forward. So I challenge them all the time, because in these hard economic times for the federal budget, we need the partner, and that helps us make the argument back here to get the dollars we need.
Yeah, definitely. Great. Now,
I was going to say one other thing I'll give them is an update on federal overall resources coming into the state. And we've been very fortunate the last couple of years between the recovery money that I voted for. We've been able to have just shy of almost $3 billion in infrastructure and tax relief for Alaskans. So it's a variety of things that always come up in the legislative session. But, again, we want to talk about the future, what the Arctic is doing, oil and gas, and kind of just general Alaska issues.
Yeah, and following up on the Commerce Committee point, I had Fran Elmer on the show a few weeks ago, and she, of course, spoke of her new role, and I'm sure you guys are working together. But this issue with the Coast Guard not having enough icebreakers, is that something that's on the agenda as well?
Absolutely. I authored the new Coast Guard reauthorization bill on the Senate side that's pending action now for the Senate. And within that, we have resources or allocated resources for icebreaker study as well as for some of the first planning. In this year's budget, there's $8 million, a step in the right direction from the administration, recognizing now that icebreakers are important. I mean, one of my biggest challenges back here, to be very frank with you, is constantly educating folks about Alaska's uniqueness and and the challenges we have, but also about how we fit into the national agenda. When I think of the Coast Guard and their efforts with icebreakers, this is an important piece of us managing our collective resource, which is the Arctic. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we spend a lot of time on is educating folks. I mean, just think about the action that just occurred with the Coast Guard. Healy was critical in breaking the ice to bring fuel to Nome.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, I took advantage of that. Not only was it an important effort for Nome, but I took advantage of it back here, educating people on, once again, what's unique about Alaska. And then also, of course, as you can imagine, then talking about icebreakers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's almost like everything we can do here, we find those, what I call those learning moments and teaching moments. And because a lot of people, you'd be surprised what people think of Alaska or what they don't know about Alaska. You know, we've been able to bring, in the last 2.5 years, 12 cabinet secretaries up to Alaska. That has had a huge impact in bringing resources to the state, but also educating folks on how important Alaska is. And again, our, in my style of just kind of piece by piece, putting it together so we get results.
Yeah, that's what you need to do, those teaching moments.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, it seems. I have a lot down here.
I'm sure you have a lot of stories. I wish we had more
time. There's some great stories. Someday I'll write a book, maybe.
You should.
Yeah.
Now, just following up on your trip here to Juneau, you're also going to speak to the World Affairs Council about your trip to Afghanistan. Is there anything that you can tell us about that trip? I don't know exactly when that happened, but experiences when you went abroad?
It was about a month ago, and
okay.
This is my second trip to Afghanistan, And we have Alaskan stationed troops right now from Alaska. There's about 9,000 in Afghanistan, about 10% of the force. So it was important, one, to go there and recognize the members. I was had an opportunity to give personal recognition to several of them who received certain types of awards for valor and heroic acts on the battlefield. But along with that, it was a chance to see our folks in action there, understand where we are in the war in Afghanistan, and also recognize that by 2014, we'll be out of there with combat troops, and what does that mean, and how is Afghanistan preparing for that? Along with that, we got a chance, I got a chance to go to what they call a forward operating base, which is a small unit, but seeing new energy technologies in a very mobile situation. And it was very interesting to see, because what I was trying to understand at the same time, educate members on, again, a teaching moment, that if you can develop these technologies in remote Alaska, in energy technologies that are remote and portable, the odds are you'll be able to use that in these kind of combat arenas. And they quickly understood that, because some obviously were from Alaska, but also had been in Alaska. And so they understood that if we could develop these in peacetime and wartime in this situation in rural Alaska and then use them in other areas as we're having engagements, it's a real powerful opportunity for Alaska. So as you can see there, even though I was in Afghanistan, I was taking a teaching moment there and talking about Alaska. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it's, you know, it's an amazing place, Afghanistan. They have huge challenges for an economy that needs to grow beyond where it's at. They have a military that's growing and clearly adding more capacity. But it's a country that's has a long ways to go still.
Wow. Do you see a third trip in the future for you?
I'm not sure. My next trip will be to Israel.
Okay.
And then for an economic development in Croatia, the Baltic states. I was there in the Baltic states a year ago, and there was a real strong interest in understanding how to develop their economies. And when I met with folks there, several different foreign ministers and prime ministers from countries, I was describing the biggest concern they have there is preserving their heritage, their culture, but recognizing they have unique aspects of tourism industry. And I explained to them how we have done it, and actually Juneau is a great example, Ketchikan, Sitka, Southeast. How do you embrace a tourism industry but also recognize you have a unique culture and environment you protect? And so we're taking, when I described this to them a year ago in Croatia, they found it very intriguing, and they've invited me back and other business leaders to come back and talk about how they can integrate their business development but protect their culture and economy. So, again, as you can see, even in Croatia, we're taking a moment to use Alaska's experiences and giving them a global perspective. Also, obviously, we hope there's some opportunity for trade and development back to Alaska. In Israel, it will be a different trip. That will be my first trip to Israel. And it'll be a chance, obviously, with a strong ally of the United States, especially right now is with the activity around Iran. It will be a very tense moment, but it will be important for me to see some of the struggles and issues they have.
Yeah. Now, talking about teaching moments in this global view, do you think Alaskans back here at home have that global perspective? Or do you find that you're trying to convince people of the need to look beyond our borders sometimes?
No, because as someone born and raised in Alaska, I mean, we kind of grew up knowing that in order for us to be successful, we have to be thinking outside of Alaska's borders, meaning that trade, for example. You know, Alaska is a net exporter, so we are already in a trade surplus for our state, and we do so much business around the globe. Our telecommunications industry, or you take an Anchorage where they have the UPS and FedEx, China Air, all those hubs of air traffic, that's international. Mm-hmm. Our military, international. You take Southeast economy between tourism, fishing, timber, all those things, the mining activity that's occurred now, especially in Juneau, that's all international.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
true.
It's a very interesting, I guess, Alaska's look. Now, I will say this, that part of my comments to the legislature also will be that they need to be bold. I think in the last decade or so, I think we've gotten too small in our thinking. In other words, when we think of things, we're kind of, well, I don't know if we lost a little bit of opportunity there, but we think we can't do it as big as we could. And so I'm going to encourage folks to think big on certain things and not be, you know, saying like the Arctic, for example, instead of just saying, well, that's an interesting idea, let's think big about it. Let's figure out what we want to do. Let's take command of the situation, because why? Alaska has enormous resources, not only people, but monetary resources, and we should figure out how to think big and bold. That, I don't know if that's just a, you know, I know when I grew up, you know, it was always about taking care of the day-to-day stuff, but we always had a big goal, a big opportunity for Alaska. And it seems like we kept getting mired down in the not thinking big enough. And so I think there's an opportunity, but I don't worry about Alaskans thinking beyond the borders, because that's how we've become successful.
That's true. Think big. Now, here in Juneau, besides, you know, speaking to groups, do you have kind of hope or an expectation for what you want to learn from your time here?
Well, I think I just want to be able to have a chance to hear kind of the legislature's thinking in regards to their budget, how that plays a role with the federal government, and how we can, again, continue to partner and what they can show me. Also, I want to see how they look at the Arctic. And, you know, because I see it as, you know, it's like when we, again, I can remember those times watching TV and watching when we decided to land on the moon, in the sense of the real activities, and watching it from just history books. And that to me was an exciting time. Here's the Arctic, huge opportunity. Are we going to grab it, think bold and big and bold, or are we just going to think small? I hope the legislature grasps what I think they could. But also I want to get a sense of what they're doing on the gas issue, because I think as time goes on, we're losing opportunity, and there seems to be a lot of folks just mired down and not breaking out, and I want to see kind of from their perspective, what does it mean? What can they do? How can we help them if there is an opportunity? So, you know, again, an opportunity to hear the legislature, but most importantly, all my other meetings with business people, individuals, that to me is where I really get the pulse of what's going on, because those folks are going to tell me, you know, exactly what they think, what the economy is doing to them, or what the education system is doing to them, or whatever's happening. They're going to tell me pretty bluntly, and I'm looking forward to that.
Good, good. In general, do you get good feedback from constituents, whether it's in D.C. or by email? Or your website's great, by the way.
Well, thank you. I'll be proud to say we won the award last year for the best, or this year, for the best website in the Senate. In the House.
Excellent.
So we were very, very pleased with it. And thank you. We revamped it. As you can see, we make it, it's not about just transmitting information. It's about creating a community where people engage, sometimes without me. You know, they're having a conversation. And that's kind of what we hope to do there. So we get, you know, 1,000 emails, correspondence, letters a week in our office. So we get a heavy dose of Alaskans keeping us informed on what's going on. I spend time, usually every evening, calling about a half a dozen folks randomly out of the emails that come through, and then, of course, other phone calls I make through the day, but randomly selecting people throughout the state, calling them and checking in with them. Most of the time, they're a little surprised. Sometimes they thought it was a recording, and then another time or so, they didn't believe me, and I would have to, actually one person I called, I remember it was last year, late last year, and I called, and they were, I think it was Seldovia they were from, and I said, you know, my name, they didn't believe me, and then I said, no, actually, your students were here in D.C. about a week ago, and I described the students, and that's how I had to verify that it was actually me. And so I think it surprises people. It's something that I think is important. It's very unique to the Senate for a senator to call constituents, you know, folks like that, just randomly, not being what they call programmed, so they know the responses. I just call them. And,
good.
And I think that's important. Then I spend time like this on radio shows, sometimes communication like this, or just straight calling. And I don't care what show it is. I go on, people ask me questions. So that's how I really keep in touch. And then when I'm not in the clutches of my staff, I do get out when I'm back home, when they don't have me scheduled 24 hours a day, and go to my favorite places, whether it be to eat or shop or something, and people will be glad to tell me what they think.
Oh, good, good. Yeah. I know that when I visited your office last year, I think you weren't there, but they have these Tuesday chats, is that what they're called, for Alaskans who are in D.C.?
Yeah, we have Wednesday coffees.
Wednesday.
Yeah, they change from year to year. But this, and what happens is people have a chance to come in and they have a chance to speak with me. This year we're doing them on Thursday mornings, and they're at 8:30. And what happens is people come in, and it's just open. You know, I give a little spiel. I introduce my staff so people know who they are. And then people talk to me, and most of the time they go talk to staff because they want to go get something done. And me, they want to just say hello or something, and they want to get detail with the staff, which is great.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
As you know, we have staff, Juneau, Ketchikan, Kenai, the Valley, Fairbanks, Anchorage. You know, we have staff throughout the state.
Yeah, well, that's good to keep in touch with everyone. No,
yes, absolutely.
We don't have a whole lot of time left, but I did want to get just an update on some of the latest things you've been working on back in Congress, maybe not necessarily related to Alaska, but what do you want Alaskans to know about the latest things you've been working on?
Well, as I would say, if it's not related to Alaska, we're probably not focused on it, but
well,
everything we do is related. Let me give you an example. I say that with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but it is reality. Everything we look at, we look through the prism of Alaska because it's important. For example, the payroll tax extension that we passed, this was the payroll tax cut. For Alaskans, this affected 400,000 Alaskans who are working or receiving a paycheck. And of that, they received last year alone $300 million in tax reduction.
Wow.
Pretty significant. Most people, it's hard to see because it's in your paycheck every week or every 2 weeks, but it averaged about $1,000 per person that they were able to save in taxes that they didn't have the IRS take from them. The other, we just passed unemployment insurance extension. We do have one of the higher unemployments, but not significant compared to other states, but still people who need unemployment insurance. We extended what we call the doc fix. This was important to make sure doctors are reimbursed at the right rates for people who are on Medicare. Because as you know, we have a Medicare crisis in Alaska for seniors to receive or have a doctor perform the may they be the regular doctor visits or other types of services without the right reimbursement. So we made sure that was taken care of. We just passed the FAA bill, which, you know, for Southeast is very important. And when you think about one of the big pieces in there called NextGen, this was actually modeled after a program called Capstone in Juneau and within Alaska. Uh-huh. And this was basically, instead of using radar, we used GPS systems. Seems so logical, right? But air traffic didn't have that. And so now it's going to be a national program. Alaska was on the cutting edge of this. We also made sure essential air service was protected, because that's an important piece of Alaska's ability to move people to and from communities. We're now working on the Highway Transportation Bill. This is, again, important to Alaska because it takes care of money for roads, ferries, mass transit. I mean, all three of those touch Juneau as an example because you have your own bus system, you have a ferry system, and you have roads.
Mm-hmm.
We also have money in there for trail systems, other means of transportation. Again, very important. We're working through that over the next couple of weeks. We are working on postal reform right now, and as you know, we have about 36 post offices in Alaska that were scheduled to be eliminated. We've been able to narrow that down to about a half a dozen left, Douglas being one of those that we're working aggressively to try to save. A lot of stuff back here from that we're working on in Washington, D.C., but everything we look at, there's an Alaska component to it because that's what we work on every day. But we also want to make sure what we work on that benefits Alaska does benefit the country because that's how we get supporters and that's how we win on these issues.
Of course. Now, on that FAA piece, is that means all airports will now use GPS in the United States?
Yeah. Wow. Yes, that's called NextGen.
NextGen, that's what it is.
Yeah, and it's basically to accelerate it and move it forward because it will save lives. It will save money because you have air time that you don't need as much in the air, and therefore fuel costs will be saved. It creates more opportunities for these congested airspace areas, you know, maybe in Chicago or Seattle or New York or so forth, that they'll be able to move more planes in and out. It's a huge, and it was Alaska that was the model for this, and now it's a national program, and absolutely will be able to use GPS. It sounds so simple, right? Right?
Yeah.
Here you are. You have it in your car. You can even have it when you're walking. You have it on your phone. But our airline industry did not have it. It was old radar system. So we're converting that, and it's going to be an exciting opportunity for all Alaskans who travel quite a bit, but all Americans.
Yeah, great. Good job with that one.
So there, as you can see, there's a lot. And then, of course, last I'll just mention is issues around fishing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a huge, this is a, also an important teaching moment we do back here, describing to the rest of the country that Alaska manages fresh-caught fish about 60% of the market. A lot of people don't realize that. And when you explain that to them, that's everything from a fish stick to a fine restaurant capacity and everything in between, suddenly people understand how important this industry is, not only to us in Alaska, but throughout the country. And we're working on some issues now related directly to fishing, making sure we continue to have sustainable fishing and that we have strong employment in it. So those are, you know, many of the things that we're working on and going to continue to work on through the year.
Yeah. I mean, in the next couple of years, right? Do you see
absolutely.
A few challenges that are still ahead on the horizon that you want to tackle?
Well, obviously, mm-hmm. the budget is the biggest challenge because mm-hmm. when you think of the budget, it touches so many things. And so we have a big challenge there to manage that. I sit on the budget committee, and we're working through some ideas on how to create a more a better slope downward. I will say the projected deficit for this next fiscal year compared to when I first came in, per year deficit is down about 35-40%. That's pretty significant. Mm-hmm. We're making some progress, continuing to build this economy, because without a strong economy, it doesn't matter if you live in Alaska or Alabama or New York or Florida, we're all going to suffer. So that's a huge challenge ahead of us. Things are moving in the right direction. That's a good thing, but we got more work to do.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of work.
Yes.
You keep busy for sure.
It's a never ending. And you know, this is a great job. I'm honored to be able to be here and do this. But, you know, every day we focus on what we do for Alaskans. And I'll tell you one quick story. About 2 weeks ago, I had the privilege to be at a pinning ceremony where we awarded a Silver Star, third highest medal that can be given to a military individual. This was a retiree from Vietnam era who did not ask for this award. It was brought to our attention by individuals who said, friends of his, that said, hey, you know, this is something that we've, you know, he deserved, he earned it, he never was granted it because they forgot about it. And so we worked through the Pentagon, my staff and others, and we were able to get this award to be given to him. We had a full service ceremony where we were able to get some of his folks from his platoon online from around the country to call in. He did not know that, and give him a little surprise, this incredible award, a Silver Star. And we had several high-ranking military officials there to help do the ceremony. It was just a very moving moment. As we deal with these big issues, you know, payroll and budgets and all that, these issues of this magnitude are the ones that make the day. Because he walked away there, you know, obviously very proud, very emotional, and all things, I mean, proud of folks. And it was just a moment in time where we could say, here's an Alaskan who didn't ask for anything, served his country, and we were able to give him the third highest medal given by the military for heroic actions.
Wow. But he felt really good. And it reminds our society, it reminds people everywhere about what they do for our country as well.
That's right. And he did it during the time of Vietnam where you volunteered. He was not drafted. So that gives you a little sense of his own commitment to his country.
Yeah. Jeez. Well, last question. How about living in D.C., Senator Begich? Has it been different living back there the past few years? Have you adapted? Do you miss Alaska?
Well, I say this. I work here. I live in Alaska. I spend about 140 days of the year in Alaska.
Oh, okay.
I flew about 130,000 miles last year. I try to get back at least a month, so you can imagine what that schedule is like. My son goes to school here, but he goes back all summer. Every week we get back to Alaska. We maintain our home there. That's where we live. And when I come home, just like a weekend ago, I was on the roof of my house shoveling snow like everyone else, making sure I didn't have drainage problems come spring. So, you know, when I was on that roof, I was wondering about it, but while I was sitting up there, and you could look around, I live off of Cheney Lake in Anchorage and see this incredible blue sky and the snow field. It's why I live in Alaska, and I work here.
Yeah, well, it's snowing here in Juneau.
There, which is always a challenge with the hills, right?
Yeah, I know. The avalanches.
That's right.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, Senator Begich, to come on the show this week and best of luck with your trip here in Juneau. I know that I want to encourage listeners out there to come listen to you at K2 on Sunday. They can come to the World Affairs Council event and hear you talk about Afghanistan. So
fantastic. Look forward to it. Again, thank you for the time, and I'm looking forward to be there. Maybe the snow will be still on the ground, and let's hope there's no avalanches. Keep it cool.
Let's hope you can make it in. Yeah. Thanks again.
There we go.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And reminder to listeners out there, if you are around this week, you can go to KTO Studios on Sunday at 2 o'clock, March 4th, and hear Senator Begich speak about his trip to Afghanistan. So that's open to the public. Thanks again for listening to the show tonight. Have a great week, and we'll see you back here next week.